that when a willing victim who has committed no treachery is killed in a traitor's stead, the table would crack and death itself would start working backwards. It's a wonderful statement in the novel. Now, the girls want to stay and talk more, but Aslan says it's time for action. And the girls get on Aslan's back while Aslan goes running off to get back to battle. And it's one of the most thrilling rides in all literature, as the girls are on his back and he's bounding over hills and rivers. And finally, he gets to the witch's castle, which is empty now because her forces are out. And in one bound, Aslan jumps over the high gate and into the courtyard of the castle. And in the castle are a whole series of statues. But they're not really statues. They are talking animals that the white witch has turned into statues by the power of her evil wand. Aslan walks up to each statue one by one and breathes on it. And when he breathes on it, it thaws out, so to speak, and comes to life. Then Aslan marshals all the restored animals into an army and marches out to a final victory against the witch and her evil minions. After this, the four children stay on to rule Narnia jointly as the two kings and two queens of Narnia, and many, many years pass until they grow up. Then, after many, many years, the children are chasing a white stag. A stag is supposed to grant wishes, they're told. And they chase the stag down, and they stumble into a wood, and as they push their way through the wood, guess what? All of a sudden, they're back in the wardrobe, back in the earth on the other side, and they're children again. Because you see, hundreds of years of Narnia history is just maybe an hour or less in human history. They work in two different temporal schemes, if you will. Now, I would think that the parallels between Aslan and Christ are quite clear. But many children and adults have read it without making the connection. And you don't have to. It's a great story. That's why it's not an allegory. It's a great story by itself. And Lewis, you know what? He didn't mind if children didn't see the Christian parallels. He hoped that it would predispose them so that when they went to church later and learned about Christ, they would love him because they loved Aslan first. So he didn't mind. And he told parents, don't explain it to your kids. Let them figure it out when the time comes. But let me give a quick overview of the Christian parallel. Again, I think it's pretty clear. Edmund is Adam, and by extension, our fallen human race, whose lives and souls, on account of our sin, our treachery, if you will, are cut off from God's grace and are forfeit to Satan. We are all like Edmund. We are in the control of the white witch or of Satan. Our soul belongs to him. Well, Aslan is Christ, who bore the weight and paid the penalty for our sins at the cross. He took our place. He was a substitute. Then Christ resurrected to a new life and to victory over sin, Satan, and death, which is just what Aslan does. A little bit harder to understand is the broken table. You may or may not know that in the Old Testament, in the Old Temple, there was a thick curtain that separated the holy place from the holy of the holiest of holies, or the holy of holies, as they called it. And only the high priest was allowed into the holy of holies, and only once a year during Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, which Jews still celebrate today. And only the priest, that one high priest, was allowed to get that close to God. Well, when Jesus was crucified, the Gospels tell us, magically or miraculously, that the curtain tore in half from top to bottom. And Christian theologians believe that signifies that now, through Christ's death, we no longer need any mediators, no longer need any high priests. We have direct access to God and to the holy holies of the temple through the sacrifice of Christ. That's one kids are not going to get, but it's a powerful metaphor in the novel. But a mere theological overview, as I just gave you, cannot do justice to the way Lewis makes the power, love, and grace of Christ real in the character of Aslan. We don't just learn theology, we feel it. I mean, we feel the sadness of Gethsemane, the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus prayed. When Aslan is walking to his death, the girls are with him, and he's weary, and he says to the girls, please place your hands upon my mane. I feel weary. Then you feel the agony or the crucifixion. When he's killed, it's the crucifixion. I went to a Good Friday sermon where the priest, instead of reading the Gospels, actually read out loud the death of Aslan, which is almost as powerful as reading the accounts of the crucifixion.